Hello, it is April 19th, 2024, and this is Political Dharma with Alan Zundel. On today's show, I'm going to be talking extensively about the likelihood or possibility of a contingent presidential election in this coming November election. Last week, I had a story about a campaign worker for the campaign of independent candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and how she said that the plan was for Kennedy to deprive either Trump or Biden from getting a majority in the Electoral College and therefore electing Trump when the decision goes over to the House of Representatives. Now, of course, the Kennedy campaign says if there were a contingent election, they would pick Kennedy, and they gave their own reasons for that. But my take on this is that it's hard to tell because we don't yet know the composition of the House of Representatives, the body that will be making that decision if it becomes a contingent election will be the members of the House of Representatives who are elected in November, not the ones who currently are serving. So I'm going to make a first pass at making some estimations at how feasible or likely it is that we would have a contingent election and who would win if we did. But before I do that, I want to have a few quick brief updates on ballot access, starting with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And he did an unusual thing this last Saturday in Iowa. Kennedy held what's called an assembly of voters. This is a third possible way of getting on the ballot in some of the states. You usually either have to get the nomination of a party, which Kennedy has not yet done, or you have to get on the, that's untrue. He did it in Hawaii. He got his party, his new party, on the ballot in Hawaii, and then they nominated him to be their presidential candidate. But he hasn't gotten the nomination of any other party. There's also the possibility of getting signatures as an independent candidate, which sometimes takes more signatures than getting a party on the ballot. So that's why they use the party route. Or in some states, you can hold a citizens' assembly where voters meet all in the same place at the same time. They hold a regular type of convention with the chairman and everything, and then they all vote on putting a candidate on the ballot for the presidency. And in Iowa, that's exactly what Kennedy did. Last Saturday, they held this type of assembly, and they needed 500 voters to show up and sign forms for Kennedy. They got over 600 people. So it looks like Kennedy should be on the ballot in Iowa as well, which would make altogether 12 states that he has met the requirements for getting on the ballot. Now, of course, there are challenges to his in various states to his signatures or his party or whatnot. In fact, in Hawaii, just a couple of weeks ago, the Democratic Party challenged the legitimacy of the We the People Party, which is Kennedy's party, his new party, that they were able to get enough signatures for. And they challenged it on the basis that some of the officers of the new We the People Party were actually registered Democrats. It's going to court now that the two officers deny that they're Democrats, and I'm not sure how that's going to come out. But the real aim here among the Democrats is simply to tie the Kennedy campaign up with lawsuits as they try to get on the ballot, to challenge it wherever they can. They're doing this especially with the American Values 2024 Super PAC, which collected signatures in four states to try to get Kennedy on the ballot. They're challenging those as well. So it's hard to tell yet if Kennedy is going to be on the ballot in all those 12 states, but he's gotten the signatures he needs in one way or another, so maybe he would be on those 12 states, assuming that he can get through all these legal hurdles. Kennedy also mentioned at the Iowa State Convention, when they asked him, ABC News had a story. They were at that Iowa Assembly, and they asked Kennedy if he was pursuing the nomination of the Libertarian Party, which we had talked about on this show as well in previous episodes, and Kennedy said he was not. The quote that he gave to ABC News, let me put that up there. If you see the middle paragraph, if you're watching this on the video version, Kennedy said, quote, "We're not going to have any problems getting on the ballot ourselves, so we won't be running Libertarian," end quote. Now that means that Kennedy thinks that using these different methods of getting on the ballot, he has a good chance of getting on the ballot without needing the assistance of the Libertarian Party, so he's not even going to pursue it. Libertarian Party wasn't clear if they wanted Kennedy, although there are some commonalities between his platform and libertarian values. His new running mate, Nicole Shanahan, his vice presidential pick, sounds a lot more like a liberal Democrat. The only area where I see some possible overlap with libertarians is in a distrust of vaccine mandates, and libertarians are all about freedom from government control. So there may be some there, but I think Shanahan may have made it even more difficult for Kennedy to become that party's nominee. Anyway, he's saying he doesn't need it anymore, and they're very enthusiastic about trying to use the assembly route in other states where it's allowed. I'm not sure which states that would include, but I do know here in Oregon, where I live, we have that on the books, that you can have a citizens' assembly. Rather than 500 citizens, you need more. You need 1,000. But I've already heard from somebody connected with the Kennedy campaign or involved in the Kennedy campaign here that they've already set a date. And I know some of my viewers are interested in Kennedy and our residents, voters in Oregon. The date will be June 8th that they'll hold an assembly here in Oregon to try to get on Kennedy on the ballot in that way. So where are we at now? Let's say, okay, one more thing on the Kennedy's pursuit of ballot access, which is that in Michigan, the Natural Law Party, another one of these very small minor parties, is the first existing minor party to nominate Kennedy to the ballot. So he's guaranteed to be on the ballot there because the Natural Law Party already has ballot access secured. The American Values 2024 PAC got enough signatures to get him on the ballot as an independent, but as I said, they've been challenged as to whether those signatures are valid for other reasons than in Hawaii. This had to do with a super PAC not being able to coordinate with a candidate and whether this was some kind of in-kind donation. So anyway, the Democrats are pressing them wherever they can, but here we have at least two states, Utah and this one, and probably Iowa, where Kennedy is sure to be on the ballot. Otherwise, he has enough signatures to get on the ballot in about 12 states altogether, as long as they're able to get through all these legal hurdles. The Natural Law Party came out of the Transcendental Meditation movement, and Michigan is the only place where the party still has a ballot line. But what they often do is just select an independent candidate and allow them to present whatever their platform is. They don't have real stringent requirements to follow the Natural Law Party's, you know, platform, which is why they chose Kennedy, I think, because he's a pretty well-known name, and if they get enough votes there, it'll help keep their party on the ballot. So turning to Cornel West, the Unity Party of Colorado last weekend nominated Cornel West and his vice presidential candidate, Malina Abdullah, to be their candidates for the presidency. That makes five for Cornel West, five states that he'll be on the ballot in, and he's much more secure in those because he's already been certified in Utah, and he's been nominated by minor parties in all those other states, such as Oregon's Progressive Party and Alaska's Aurora Party, and there's another one, I think, in one of the Carolinas, and Alaska, I think. I already said Alaska. Anyway, he's on the ballot in five states. He's much more secure in that than Kennedy was. So what about Joe Biden? How's he doing? Let me switch back to you seeing my face, whether you really want to or not. Here the problem is that the Democrats decided they were going to hold their national nominating convention in later August, August 19th through the 22nd. But some states have laws in the book saying that to get on the ballot in November in their state, you have to be certified by 90 days before the election, which would be August 7th. That's before the convention. So this kind of problem has sometimes happened in the past when major parties hold their nominating conventions a little bit later in the summer. But what usually happens is the state legislatures change the law to make an exception, or the elections official, like the Secretary of State's, will accept a provisional certification. So this year, there's three states where Biden had trouble potentially getting on the ballot in November. One of them is Washington State, but that's controlled by Democrats, both the governorship and this legislature. So they're going to give him a provisional certification. They already said that. No problem there for Biden. But in Ohio and Alabama, they're controlled by Republicans. So we have this case where Ohio is giving the Democrats a hard time as far as putting Biden on the ballot in November. They call it in this article petty political theatrics, but what the Republicans are saying is that they're simply following the law. There's no provisional certification in the law. You have to have your candidate certified by your party by August 7th, 90 days before the election, and they won't be able to do that. So what they do have to do is change the law in order to get the candidate on the ballot. Now, in Alabama, it's also controlled by Republicans, but they've already moved a bill to change the deadline, I think temporarily, just for this one election, to change the deadline a little bit later to allow Biden on the ballot. They passed the law in committees of both houses. It looks like that'll pass. And that's what usually happens because the major parties do take care of each other that way. If one of the major party candidates has a problem getting on the ballot, they change the law to make an exception for them, something they would never, ever do for an independent candidate like Kennedy or Cornell West or a minor party candidate like the nominees of the Green Party or the Libertarian Party. They would never do that. They are much more stringent about their laws regarding those kind of candidates. But often with the major parties, they scratch each other's backs. Although in this day and age, you really don't know because the maneuvering around elections is getting more and more vicious, as you know, with attempts to overturn elections or to gerrymander even more blatantly to get control of a legislature. So in Ohio, which is very heavily gerrymandered in favor of the Republicans, it's hard to say which way they're going to go. I assume they're going to give Biden a break, but they may not, in which case Kennedy may have a chance of picking up all those Biden voters and defeating Trump in Ohio. So that would probably be to the advantage of the Republicans if they did bring in Biden and allowed Kennedy to try to draw votes from each side. So much for Biden. Now let's move towards the idea of a contingent election. And first up, let me explain again what a contingent election is. Each state in a presidential election gets a certain number of electoral college votes. These are actual people that cast these votes. They're called electors. And in November, when we vote in the various states, whoever, in almost all the states, whichever candidate gets the most votes in that state, even if it's not a majority, whoever gets the most votes gets all the electoral college votes from that state. Then the electors all gather at the state capitals on a particular day, and they vote. And then it's sent to the U.S. Congress, where it's counted. And if none of the candidates get a majority of the electoral college votes, then it is a contingent election, which means the Senate chooses the vice president and the House of Representatives chooses the president under a certain set of rules. So how likely is it is to have a contingent election? Well, let me first, before I get into that, play this little clip about Kennedy's view about his chances of winning in the Electoral College. This is a clip from the PBS NewsHour back about 5 months ago when Kennedy was being interviewed by Amnon Nawaz.
How do you translate that polling support, which is, to be clear, a year out, right? A lot can happen in the next year. How do you translate that into electoral support, though? I mean, because independent campaigns, especially ones as large as yours, they faced legal challenges in the past, external pressure. You look at Ralph Nader in 2004. What's your path to 270? Are you targeting specific states, for example?
Yeah, we're targeting specific states, and, you know, you're right.
Which states are you targeting?
We're targeting, I mean, all of the traditional battleground states are states that we think we can do really well, and all I need to do...
But you're talking Wisconsin, Pennsylvania...
Yeah, and all I need to do in those states, Arizona, Michigan, Ohio, Georgia, all I need to do in those states is get 34% of the vote, and I can walk away with 270 electors. So, you know, because the electors are winner take all, and it's assigned by plurality rather than majority.
The 270 they kept referencing was the number of electoral college votes you have to get a majority, a bare majority. Overall, there's 535 electoral votes. So half of that is 269.5, which means 270 is slightly above half of the Electoral College votes. And that's what you need to win. What Kennedy was saying, that if he wins, if he comes in first in the battleground states, the ones that they mentioned there, there's about, what, half a dozen of them, he could get the 270 votes to win. He also mentioned if he gets 34% of the vote, I think, which is assuming that Biden and Trump exactly split the rest of the votes, 33% each, and Kennedy gets just slightly more than both of them, which is unlikely. It may tip one way or the other towards one major party candidate or the other, so Kennedy would actually have to get a little more than 34% of the votes to win in some of those states. But he's saying that if he got those states, he would actually win the Electoral College. Now, there's an even bigger problem with that than the assumption about a 34% of the vote, and that would be that, let's look at this map that comes from the website 270towin.com. It has the battleground states, if you're watching this in the video version, in tan. They're colored in tan, and it's mostly the same states that they mentioned. There's Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, everything except Ohio, and there's 17 electoral votes, but it includes Nevada's with its 6 electoral college votes. But altogether, I've circled at the top, there's a little bar that shows how many electoral college votes there are for those various combinations of states, those various collections of states, in the battleground states, also called the swing states, which means that usually in a presidential election, the vote is very close between the two major party candidates, so that it's hard to tell which way it's going to go in any particular election, depending on various circumstances of that election. If Kennedy won in all of those battleground states on this list, he would only have 77 electoral votes, which is far short of the 270 he would need. Now, suppose we include then what they call leaning states, which means that some of the states that tend to elect the president from one party or the other, but you know the margin between the two candidates is a little bit narrower than in others, so it could easily go the other way if there was, say, a strong movement of voters towards the other party. And here we have another 5 electoral college votes for the Democrat leaning states. And what does that say? About 17, hard for me to read, for the Republican-leaning votes. But as you see, as I circled at top with that rather crude blue rectangle, using my left hand because my right hand is still a little bit out of commission, he would still only have 99 Electoral College votes, still far short of the 270 that he would need. So no way are the battleground states, even if you include the states that lean towards one party or another, going to be enough to get him where he needs to go. So let's include more states. This is the states, really it's all the states now, what they call the likely states, likely to vote one way or the other, are included now. It just excludes what are called the safe states, where the margin of difference between the parties is so large in favor of one party or the other that you can reliably predict it's going to go for that party's candidate. If you include all the states except the safe states, you still only get to 226 electoral college votes, still short of the 270 that you would need. So it doesn't seem very likely that Kennedy can come in first in all those states, and therefore he's, in my mind, and I don't want to discourage anybody, but I don't think he has that big of a chance of winning in the Electoral College, getting a majority of the votes in the Electoral College. But he does have a chance of winning in a contingent election. So contingent election, again, is that if he wins enough states with their electoral votes that no one would have a majority of the electoral votes, and the decision would go over to the U.S. House of Representatives. So if Kennedy did come in first in at least one of those battleground states, and the vote was very close, if the electoral vote between Trump and Biden was very close, Kennedy might just take away enough electoral votes to deprive either of them of a majority. Now, of course, if he wins in even more states, there's an even bigger chance that he will deprive them of winning a majority. And in fact, I think he has even though I think his best chance is in the swing states, the battleground states in general, because neither of the major party candidates has an advantage over the other, he's even more likely to have a good chance in the states that are now going to use ranked choice voting in the presidential election. That would be Maine and Alaska. Each of them are going to use ranked choice voting for the presidential election in November, which means if Kennedy can just get in second place, beating out either Trump or Biden, he would probably win the Electoral College votes in that state, because in the next to last round of ranked choice voting, where you have three candidates left, if Kennedy was in second place, then either Trump or Biden would be eliminated, and all of those voters who voted for whichever candidate was eliminated, their second choice would likely to be Kennedy. That is, if Trump is eliminated, his second choice votes are more likely to be Kennedy than Biden, so those votes would go to Kennedy. And if Biden is eliminated, their second choice of those voters is more likely to be Kennedy than Trump, so those Biden voters' votes would then go to Kennedy, and Kennedy would be Trump. So in those states with ranked choice voting, the two states, as long as Kennedy could come in even just second, not even first, he's probably going to win. If he gets the second most first choice votes, he'll probably beat out the other candidate in the final round. So I think it's feasible that he could deprive the major party candidates, given that the electoral vote is fairly close between Trump and Biden, and Kennedy either wins in one or more states and or wins in the ranked choice voting states, comes in second there, and then wins that way. It's a good chance that this will be thrown to the House of Representatives. Let's look at another clip, this time Kennedy talking about a contingent election and what he expects to happen. This was about 3 months ago on News Nation. You can find it on YouTube, just like you can find the PBS clip on YouTube, talking to Dan Abram.
You've made it clear that, you know, your goal is certainly not to help Donald Trump. You've said that you think you actually hurt Donald Trump more than help him. But if you were to take enough Electoral College votes and neither Trump or Biden got the necessary number, then you are kind of giving the election to Donald Trump, no?
We don't think so, Dan. if no candidate gets 270 votes, it goes to a contingent election. In the contingent election, the Senate chooses the vice president and the House chooses the president. But according to the rules of the 12th Amendment, each state gets one vote.
Right.
And the congressional delegation has to agree on it. And if you actually look at the composition of the congressional delegations, there's no way that they'll be able to agree on it. The Republicans have a 9-state advantage. So if you just said, okay, that states get to vote red or blue, but that there's a lot of delegations that are split, like, for example, Minnesota, and the Democrats are never going to vote for Trump, and the Republicans are never going to vote for Biden. They'll lose their careers. So we think it's going to end up with a compromise candidate, and we think that that's going to be me.
Oh, that's interesting.
If that happens.
Okay.
So what he's saying there is, in a contingent election, none of the Democrats in the U.S. House will vote for Trump, and none of the Republicans will vote for Biden. Therefore, there will be a stalemate, and they would turn to Kennedy as a compromise candidate. Now, that depends on the idea that there would be a stalemate, that there's equal numbers on each side for the two major parties. Now, remember, in a contingent election, each state delegation in the U.S. House gets one vote as a body. That is, Michigan's congressional delegation gets one vote. Nevada's congressional delegation in the U.S. House gets one vote. But it does not have to be a unanimous vote. So as long as, say, in Michigan, you've got seven Democrats and six Republicans, and they each vote for their party candidate, the vote of Michigan would go to the Republican because they would have 7-6, right? So as long as the in a particular state there is more congressional members from that state who belong to the same party than the other party, they're going to get the vote, that candidate of that party is going to get the vote from that state. So what I did is I looked at the current composition of the U.S. House to determine which states had which party as the majority in their delegation to the U.S. House. So I hope that was clear. I'm trying to determine how the various states would vote in a contingent presidential election if the composition of the House was the same as it is right now. So let's take a look at what I found when I did that. So if we have the same composition in the U.S. Congress that we have right now, and we have each state getting one vote, we have 26 out of the 50 states having a Republican majority and 22 of the 50 states having a Democratic majority. Now, the Republicans therefore have a majority of the states voting for the Republican, presumably. And I can't see why, you know, a single Republican, let alone a bunch of them, would not vote for the Republican candidate and vote for Kennedy instead, or vote for the Democrat, or just sit out, unless there was a significant amount of pressure to do that, because the pressure would be more on the other side. They would be, if their vote could make the change in who became president, there would be a lot of pressure for them to stick with the party. So in the current Congress, we have states with a Republican majority outnumbering and having a majority over the states with the Democratic majority. There are two states that have an equal number of members in the House from both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, and that's Minnesota and North Carolina. And they might have a stalemate in those particular states, but that would not affect the outcome because the Republicans already have a majority of the votes for that. All right, so you would have Donald Trump as the president. Now, that 26 is just barely in the majority. If they had 25, that wouldn't be enough. So all it would take is one state defecting from that Republican column in order to produce a stalemate there. In the Senate, I want to look at the bottom part of this picture here. The vice president is chosen by the Senate. Now, whereas in the House of Representatives, they choose between the three top vote-getting candidates, which presumably would be Biden, Trump, and Kennedy, in the Senate, they pick from the top two candidates, which would, I think, most likely be the Republican and the Democrat, Kamala Harris and whoever the Republican vice presidential pick is likely to be. Now, in the Senate, it's one vote per senator. We have 49 Republican senators and 48 Democratic senators with three independents. And based on a strict party line vote, there would be no winner of the vice presidential election if it was thrown to the Senate. But I want to say that those independents, Bernie Sanders is one of them, and he would be, I think, extremely likely to vote for Kamala Harris for vice president over any other vice presidential candidate. The other one is Agnes King of Maine. He generally caucuses with the Democrats, though I think he would go in their direction as well. That would get them up to 50. Now, Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona, she was nominally a Democrat for a long time. She became an independent because she is often going against the Democratic caucus. She's a wild card, hard to tell which way she would go. And I think she's not likely to win her Senate race this November, so there may be somebody else replacing her, either Democrat or Republican, would make a big difference in the outcome here. But there is also a Republican, at least one Republican, that would be likely to vote for the Democrat over the Republican, which is Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, who voted to impeach Trump in one of those impeachment trials. So in the Senate, it's really hard to tell which way it goes, but it looks like, according to my calculations, if we had the current U.S. Congress composition, you would have Trump winning in the House of Representatives and Kamala Harris winning as the vice presidential candidate, which would be a very unusual ticket. Now, of course, there's going to be some change in the election, maybe a couple of senators, most likely Kyrsten Sinema. I don't know who else is having a big challenge. Of course, some members of the Congress are going to retire and will be replaced by somebody. But it doesn't look to me like there'll be a lot of change between the parties. But on the other hand, this is so close right now that even small changes might make a big difference if there were a contingent election. So let us move to the possibility of change in the 2025 election. And here's my calculation here, which is that, okay, reminding you that currently Republicans have a majority in the House in 26 states and Democrats in 22 states. Now, how likely is it that in this coming election there'll be a change? What I did is I looked at each state to determine those that the difference between the Republicans and Democrats was only one seat in the House, meaning that if one representative lost to the other party, that it could change the outcome. I thought in the states that are apt to switch away from the Republicans to the Democrats, I couldn't find any states where I thought that was likely to happen, because many of these states, the one vote that they have in the House is very small states like Wyoming, and they're pretty likely to stay Republican. Now, even though Democrats couldn't win that, I mean, it's possible that a candidate could win who's more friendly to Kennedy than Trump. I don't know. I haven't looked into those various people who are running, coming up, and I haven't noticed anybody in either party in the Congress talking favorably about Kennedy, but between now and then, who knows what could happen. So it seems to be unlikely that any of those states are going to switch from Republicans to Democrats. On the other hand, the states apt to switch from the Democrats to Republicans, there's four of them: Alaska, Michigan, Virginia, and Pennsylvania. In Alaska, they only have one seat in the House. It's currently a Democrat, but it's usually a Republican. They use ranked choice voting, which produced that unusual outcome. And it could change back because now the Republicans are hip to how ranked choice voting works, and they may combine forces on their second choice votes to make sure they get a Republican. So Alaska change. Michigan, Virginia, and Pennsylvania, all the difference is in one seat. And currently the Democrats have an advantage in that one seat, but all it takes is a switch of one seat in any of those states, and it's flipped it from a majority of Democrats to a majority of Republicans, which means that it still looks like the Republicans are likely to have the advantage in a contingent election. The two states that have equal numbers of Republicans and Democrats, of course, it's possible for one of those seats to switch hands. That would be Minnesota and North Carolina. If they switch to the Democrats, it still doesn't help, because the Republicans still have the majority of these states, unless they lose one, which seems more unlikely. They could also switch to the Republicans, which would help them even more. And the states that are apt to switch from Republicans to an equal number of votes, I could find only one that I thought had any possibility, and that was Kansas, because all the rest seemed pretty firmly in the Republican column. I didn't think there would be much chance of it going over to a split vote. Now, that all that could be different if there's a strong wave towards the Democrats. There could be more seats won than one would expect in an ordinary election, and therefore they could get the majority of the states in their column in a contingent election, and Biden could win. So it's hard to tell. It really depends on the dynamics of the election overall, and we're kind of far right now from knowing what that's going to be. I haven't looked at it very closely. As we move closer towards the election, I'm going to go through this exercise again and see how it's going, to see if I'll change my mind on any of this. It's going to depend on which seats in the House or Senate look like they may change hands from one party to the other, and in which states that happens, and also how well Kennedy is doing, if he's growing in support and he's getting more voter interest, and it looks like he's likely to capture some states enough to make a contingent election happen. So it's still feasible that Kennedy could at least get a contingent election out of his candidacy. But whether he would win that contingent election is, to me, still doubtful. What it would take is for all of you out there and a heck of a lot of other people to work very hard in the Kennedy campaign and on your congressional members as well, pressuring them in case there's a contingent election to elect Kennedy. So that seems like a contingent election is possible. A Kennedy victory would take a heck of a lot of work. Not trying to discourage anybody with this prediction, what I'm saying. I'm actually trying to encourage you. If you really want Kennedy to win, you're going to have to work really, really hard to get to that point. So that is my show for today, and hope you got something out of it. Hope that was all pretty clear. I got a little lost in the middle of it, so I had to kind of cut a couple of times to come back to where I was and try to figure it out. Anyway, if you like the show, please hit the like button. If you don't want to miss future shows, hit the subscribe button. I like to hear your comments, so please comment wherever you're watching this. It's available on YouTube, on Rumble in video form, and on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and other places in audio form. And if you want to help the show financially, go to the Political Dharma website at politicaldharma.com. And there is a big fat button that you can click in order to reach the secure PayPal link to donate a little bit. Help me out keeping this thing going and maybe even improving the quality as we go into the future. Thanks for watching. And we'll see how this thing takes shape over the coming months. It's kind of an exciting election from the standpoint of alternative presidential candidates and what might come out of this. I'm also thinking that one of Kennedy's possible stratagems is if we have a stalemate in the House in voting for president, is a contingent election, we have a stalemate in the House, but Kamala Harris wins in the Senate, then Kennedy has a pitch to make the Republicans, if you vote for me, that Kamala Harris will not become president by virtue of the fact that you can't elect a president. That is, if the House is at a stalemate and doesn't choose any presidential candidate, Kamala Harris, if she wins the vice presidency, would become president until they're able to act. So maybe I should go over that in a future episode because it's even more complicated. But it does give Kennedy a way to try to pressure Republicans to vote for him, assuming that Kamala Harris is the vice presidential pick in the upcoming election and that the House gets at a stalemate in a contingent election. So that's too mind-boggling already, right? Okay, future episodes hope to straighten that out. Thanks again for watching.
I see the chains are breaking. We gained our focus. The moves we're making will prove to determine our self-worth as a passenger on this vehicle Earth.